Hot route! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot route!
I don't. What is hot route?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch. Nom, 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 nom.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you gonna get me the ball?
I'll get you the ball.
Get
me the ball.
I
hope he didn't kill somebody.
Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's going to make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
I got a whole lot of money. Y'all it for me. Bottle key popping that water bag.
Welcome in to another excellent, exciting, extravagant, spectacular edition of the 11 Personnel Podcast.
Week zero version.
It is week zero. Welcome to week zero. We did it.
Football season is here.
We did it. It's football season. Congratulations. Congratulations, ladies and gentlemen. We have made it to week zero of the college football season, where this Saturday, the Florida Gators and Miami Hurricanes will kick off the 150th season of college football down at Camping World Stadium in Orlando, Florida. And Adam Luckett, I could not be more excited to watch some real football.
Not only that, Mr. Rouse, you get Pac-12 after dark on the islands, Arizona at Hawaii. So after you catch a little buzz, maybe get in a hole early against Florida and Miami, you can catch up with Arizona and Miami. You could do that late game chasing already.
Man.
College game day live from Disney World.
I mean,
get you pumped up.
How great is it that they're not only giving us a real football game, they're also giving us Pac-12 after dark to, like, they're weaning us off.
Couldn't have a better start.
Nice little come down. It's a nice little come down. And I know we'll be celebrating at KS Bar and Grill Saturday night. There's plenty of different places where you can be celebrating the college football season. And before everything gets kicked off, we're going to talk a lot that's gone on around the world of Kentucky football. We're going to talk a little over-unders, a little gambling today.
We got some picks for you.
Oh, yeah. And also, we're going to talk about something that I'm really excited about, Adam Luckett, and that is Bourbon and Beyond. Have you ever been to Bourbon and Beyond?
I have not, but I've heard a lot of great things.
Well, this year is the first year I'm going to Bourbon and Beyond, and I could not be more excited because the world's largest bourbon festival has expanded to 3 days and moved to the Highland Festival Grounds at the Kentucky Fair and Expo Center. From September 20th through the 22nd, you can hear CCR's John Fogerty, Robert Plant, Holland Oates, ZZ Top, the Foo Fighters, and more. And here's the best part, is that, like, it's the Mississippi State weekend. No, you're not going to Starkville, okay? Mm-hmm. You can go to Bourbon and Beyond. You can see some of your favorite bands. Two of my favorites are going to be there. You ever hear Zach Brown Band?
I've heard of them.
Yeah, it got a jam or two. Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats. Folks,
one of my favorites is on here Thursday night, Blackberry Smoke.
Blackberry Smoke.
They get after it.
Oh, nice.
A little
nice
Southern rock band.
Ooh.
They are awesome.
And Leon Bridges, too, man. He's got a lot of soul.
Yes, he is good.
He's really good. So I could not be more excited. So just do the smart thing and join us over at Bourbon and Beyond. Visit bourbonandbeyond.com for tickets. Get them right freaking now. And we will see you there. And, you know, maybe one of you are lucky enough to win some tickets if you keep listening to this podcast.
Yes.
Just saying, that might be something in the near future, folks.
We're a podcast for the people.
Yes.
Nick Roush.
We are for the people. And we might have a little something for you coming on down the road to see Bourbon and Beyond. Now, speaking of seeing, I have two eyeballs. And today, these two eyeballs laid eyes on Kentucky football practice with shoulder pads, with pants. It was an actual scrimmage, Adam Luckett.
How they look, Mr. Rouse.
Good.
Give us a scoop. Give us the insider information.
First things first, folks. Brandon Echols is the real deal, Holyfield. Kentucky has a good cornerback.
6 interceptions, 12 pass breakups. I believe it was first team JUCO All-American last year. This was the rap coming out.
It's pretty good.
Of junior college.
Yeah, and here's the thing. When we watched that practice back at Media Day where they were just in helmets, we were like, all right, is Lynn Bowden just that good? Can nobody guard him? Like, what's the deal? Dude is always open. A lot of it is Lynn Bowden is that good. But when they go one-on-ones in just straight man, like, this is kind of like a warm-up drill for the receivers and cornerbacks. It's just, let's match up one-on-one. You know, they tried to put him up by position. Jordan Griffin, you know, he's okay. He's got some size on Bowden. But Bowden finds a way to get open and man-to-man. He just does. Eccles is the only person that can guard him. And not only can he guard on the boat, he can guard every dude on that lineup. And I really wanted to bring up how he guarded Ahmad Wagner, because Wagner
has about a foot on him.
Yeah, and I was impressed with Ahmad Wagner today, because he did receiver things that weren't like just jump up and catch. He was really good at blocking when they were in the inside drill, when they were running. They ran a little end around a boat because they thought that he was going to run a fade, and then he broke down and laid a block on the guy. He was getting open on slants, on posts, on routes where it requires you to break to get open. I was like, okay, Ahmad Wagner's got this. Well, he didn't when Eccles got up on him in press. And even somebody as physical as Ahmad Wagner, Eccles had enough physicality for him. So I'm excited about Brandon Eccles. The biggest thing is just keep the guy healthy. Just keep him on the field as much as you can.
Yeah, I mean, that's big news. He's missed a lot of camp, so obviously that's not something you want. But he was supposed to be that guy that they plugged in there, and then at the other corner spot is where they were going to figure stuff out.
Yeah, and the thing is like the other spot, remember how we left that first practice like, ooh, Cedric Duard. I was like that with Jamari Brown today, because he was very physical at the point of attack.
Now, were they playing him behind Dort? Or was he on
the other side? No, he was on the other side. Okay. Dort was playing behind Eccles.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's a surprise.
Yeah. So, and I think it's because Brown plays physically. And I was talking to, somebody was like, not Eli Brown, but Jamari, because they're both Brown. They both wear 32. Both really physical, really long arms. And I really liked that Brown didn't shy away from the contact. And I think that's what you need. Speed is great, but physicality, those dudes are big, and they're talented in the SEC, and you need that, especially at that corner.
Yeah, that's something that's definitely needed, and Brown was the guy that was kind of not really heavily sought after out of South Florida in that class, so redshirt year, obviously last year, so it's good to see that he's answering the challenge, and if he's starting, it's sounding like maybe he's kind of outplaying Dort in camp.
Right, and I think that might end up being the case. Now, Nickel, though.
They're swimming a little bit.
They're gonna miss Mike Edwards.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Nickel and outside linebacker, both of those are really tough because you're kind of in no man's land.
You have to do all three things well.
Yes. And that's
cover, blitz, and defend against the run, hold up against the run.
And right now, I think they've got a bunch of dudes who are good at one thing, but they don't have somebody who's great at all three.
Right.
So, like, Yusuf Corker.
Could be a situational type thing.
Yeah. Well, so right now, Corker is, I think they're starting like free.
Yeah, that's what I would project him
because
to be at,
he's
where Darius
he's
West
a,
was last
he's
year.
He's a big dude.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good in run support. Not really good at locking up on somebody. Not ideal for, like, he can't cover a slot. I don't think he can.
Right. Which was why I think they kind of moved him from corner originally to safety.
So he could come up and just lay the pipe and...
Because so he could come up and play downhill, where at safety he was just probably struggling to cover guys.
Because he made some plays.
All right, corner he was struggling
in zone coverage that I was like, okay, all right. He was reacting whenever the ball was in the way when they were trying to run digs and squares and stuff like that across the middle of the field.
I think he's going to be at his best where he can just kind of scream towards the line of scrimmage, make a read, and then just go play off instincts. Where he might struggle is what we see if he's, you know, back in cover three, cover four, and having to play a zone there. That could be a learning curve for him at the SEC level. So, but when I think he's going to be a guy that is going to flash to a lot of people because when he gets downhill, he's just so big and he's really fast and he's going to come up and really make, I think, some good big plays in run support.
And I think on the opposite end, Ty Agent is one that they kind of like from his kind of ball instincts.
I think he has the frame of what they like in that to play that nickel spot. He's kind of 6 foot, 187, 190 pounds. Kind of built. He's got a thicker lower body.
Yeah. Oh,
he's kind of hold up.
He's got a wide trunk.
I think he's got good short area quickness, so that's good if you want to, you know, bring him on a blitz or to, you know, guard a quick slot receiver in a short amount of space. Mm-hmm. I think he probably is the guy that they want there, but I don't know.
I don't know if he's come out. Yeah, I don't know if he's progressing quick enough, and I don't know how much of it's just like, hey, you got to learn by fire, trial by fire, because they started with Jordan Griffin as the first one up,
right,
in nickel, because he is the most experienced. He's a true senior, 4-year player, but I also wonder if he's like he is the kind of Marcus McWilson type, where McWilson always had the athleticism built. He kind of went about things the way, like, the coaches liked the way he carried himself, but getting to that final, getting over the hill was tough for him.
Right.
And it's because he didn't have that redshirt year. And I think that might be the case of Griffin. McWilson had, I mean, aside from the one play that we all remember in the Governor's Cup, he had a great, well, I mean, aside
his senior year in 2016, he was really good.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe like the first two or three games, it took, but by the end of it, he was really good. So maybe that's the case with Griffin, where he hasn't had a lot of game reps. Once he gets Toledo and Eastern Michigan up under his belt, he can hit his stride.
Right.
So,
and they're going to get tested right out of the chute, because Toledo spread offense, you're going to have that nickel out for most of those snaps. And then Eastern Michigan spreads it out and throws it around a little bit. They're going to run a lot of, you know, you're looking at a lot of 10 personnel, 4 wide receivers, 11 personnel, 3 wide receivers at pretty much all time. So that nickel spot is going to play a lot of snaps to start the season, and they're really going to be tested right out the chute, which is good. You want to see what you got there, especially in that first two games before you get into the meat and potatoes of the conference schedule.
The one other, actually, before I move on, I want to see, because I'm trying to think of who their other safety was, and it's escaping me right now. It's driving me nuts.
Was Mosley out there at all?
Who? No, no. Mosley was, who was the other?
Let's see here.
It's driving me nuts, because I had it, and I guess
was
I
Moses Douglas?
No, but, oh, man. It's going to drive me nuts who the other safety
was. Let's pull up this old handy-dandy roster we got here. Good thing about Kentucky's athletic site, you can sort by position.
Oh.
So when you're struggling, like we are a little bit right now,
we're struggling right now. Because I didn't think that they just rolled up Griffin into a nickel spot from safety.
Did they maybe move in Stanley Garner back there?
Garner's been playing corner, and he was dropped back. Mosley, man, I haven't seen Stoops chew somebody out in a long time like he chewed out Mosley.
Yeah, I think they're really wanting him to be good, and he's probably not there right now.
Well, because they moved him in both spots, so he's probably swimming a little bit trying to figure out which one. But it was Stoops is like, yeah, you covering grass? What are you covering out there? Oh, it was so funny. Watching coaches chew out, especially Eddie Grant's the funniest to watch chew out players, because he doesn't like he doesn't curse. So he'll say, gosh darn it almighty, you know, like
he's like everybody's neighborhood grandpa.
He is like, you know how Walt Kowalski and Gran Torino could curse? Like, you were like, I've never heard somebody spin a curse word quite like that before.
Right.
He does that without curse words. It's quite impressive. And the thing is I only wrote down Corker, Griffin, Dort, and Brown. So
I don't know. I mean, it could have been one of the freshmen. You're looking at Geiger, Taj Dotson.
No.
Maybe a walk-on. Maybe
Douglas did get reps of the twos, and I got it mixed up on my practice report that Dotson was the one who laid the pipe. Square got it mixed up. I took his word for it.
Square is another – I was thinking about this today. If you're struggling in nickel so bad, if Square is the coverage guy you think he is, you could get away with playing more base if he can go out and cover some slot receivers or tight ends in the slot. So that's something to keep an eye on. And he might have the ability, because a lot of people projected him to play safety out of high school, he might have the ability where Kentucky doesn't need to necessarily
if he just plays Carl Fine,
play nickel. Yeah. Yes, he may just have – they can just be like – hey, Cash is better here in pass coverage, or we can put Chris Ultz in there at middle.
Yeah. Even Jamin Davis is apparently had a really good fall camp.
Jamin Davis is going to end up, I think, by the end of the season, being proven to be one of the better reserve inside linebackers in the conference. 6'4", 224 pounds. I think he can play both spots. I think he has the potential to be a really good blitzer, and he's kind of waited his time, redshirt sophomore. It's time for him to make a name for himself. I think he's going to be a guy that makes an impact at special teams and in a reserve role.
The big thing with Davis is because he was really good early, but I think he was one of those that like had to learn like how to be patient and yet still work hard.
Right.
Which is tough for kids. But you know what I think it was? I think I only wrote down those four because they just started off in base and they had Pascal in at Jack and Jordan Wright in at Sam. Which, so I heard that, that's what happened at the scrimmage, but like, it's like, that don't sound right. So I waited to say anything about it. And then today, that's where Wright was again. So I guess they're...
To me, it's a move. You make the move, one, because you think maybe Xavier Pierce is going to be cleared. So then that gives you two Jacks with him and Pascal, and then you move Wright to maybe be the hybrid switch in between both. But I think they're also probably trying to save Jared Casey's red shirt.
I think they are, too. Because
and that's the thing with Douglas, too. He's going to be a guy that plays this year, but they're going to be careful in how they use him because they're going to want to save that red shirt.
Well, and I think the thing is, so there were four or five true freshmen that were running with the twos. Casey Weaver, Devin Shire, and Douglas. And I think especially in Casey and Weaver's case, really talented guys from the city of Louisville. But playing outside linebacker...
Top two recruits from the class last year.
Yeah. Playing outside linebacker in SEC is much different than 6A public school ball and Moore high school football. No right. offense to Ballard or Moore, but the fundamentals require... I mean, it's a lot of just keep your outside and shoulder free and go hit the quarterback.
The wear and tear, too. Every week, you're going to take a beating.
Because that was the one thing just by watching those guys. They have done an exceptional job. Like they keep everything flushed in, but there's a big difference between that and then... playing all the other nuances and knowing when to attack and not getting too far upfield. Right. Things like that.
But I think the coaches also know Boogie Watson is one of the better players on the defense.
Yeah.
He's not going to leave the field much.
Right.
He's going to be out there a lot.
Yeah. And we're at the part of camp, too, where a lot of those dudes aren't playing a lot. Like right. TJ Carter didn't play a lot today.
The other guys' reps.
Yeah. And Lynn Bowden spent more time playing quarterback than he did receiver today.
Right.
Which, okay, first and foremost, awesome to see. Just from a, like, ooh, well, what if they did do it? I think some of it is like, all right, let's Lynn throw it around. But also, if he gets his timing down, he throws a good deep ball. He's just a second or two late.
Right.
Like, all of his deep balls are just
underthrown
by 5-10 yards. It's going to
be a different type of wildcat formation we're going to see this year.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, and what I thought was unique, too, I saw Chris Rodriguez in it, and he was really patient out of it. And so you can still run your Benny type of wildcat with Rodriguez.
Yeah, your short yardage stuff.
But if you can have a dynamic where defenses, like if Bowden's a legit throwing threat, even if it's just once a game, and let's say that's a completion, that's three more yards of room that Bowden has to work with when he's running out of it.
Right.
That's three more. And 3 yards is a world of difference for that guy compared to, you know, Joe Schmo. So, you know, I think it'd be fun, even though, like, I do have a feeling there was, like, you know what, all this media going to be out here? Let's talk about how much let's get them talking about how much Lynn Bowden's going to throw it. Get all these defenses that we're about to play prepared for us, and maybe we'll get a, you know, hit a big player or two out of, you know,
right.
coming out the gate so they have to prepare.
That's what I'll be interested to see coming out of the shoot in the first two games, how much they kind of use that wildcat formation. Because, you know, they're saying, you know, they got to get through Toledo and Eastern Michigan first, and both those games have some, I think, we'll get into it down the line, they have some, like, bumpy areas that Kentucky's going to have to be aware of going into the game. But, you know, that Florida game, that's a big game. Chance to win two in a row over Florida in the longest time. Ticket sales, which are going really good right now. They just sold out of pocket passes.
It's pretty crazy.
They sold out of the three-game flex pack. Four-game flex pack.
So you can only get season tickets or single-game tickets.
Right.
Which is pretty crazy.
Right, so... that's going to be a crazed atmosphere for that Florida game. And that's kind of, in some ways, it's kind of a kitchen sink game for Kentucky. They're just going to let it, you know, all hang out. Let's see if we can go beat these dudes twice. They're going to be, Florida's going to be top, you know, as long as they don't lose to Miami, they're going to be borderline top five team.
Which is
crazy. Night game on ESPN.
Which is absolutely insane.
Yeah, so.
And stupid. People drink.
And then if Kentucky wins that game, then you're kind of setting yourself up the same as last year. But you're going to be more in kind of that national spotlight. More people are going to be kind of taking you serious then. Yep. Because if a win there kind of says, last season wasn't a fluke. This team that you're talking about that might be Georgia's stiffest competition, heck, we just beat them twice in a row. So, hey, look at us. So, in a lot of ways, that's what I'm interested in. So, getting back to my original point, it's just how much they – I'm interested to see how much they used Bolden in those first two games in that gun formation to – either set something up or save something back.
See, because that's the thing. It's like there's on one hand, you want teams to be prepared for – like you want to force them to prepare for things.
Right.
But on the other hand, how much do you want to show? But it was just kind of like what was the game last year where they ran the trick play to Zaire Hughes?
Murray State.
Yeah, that was early in the year, and they just wanted to show like a crazy reverse to make the other team prepare for it.
Right.
So it's – that'll be interesting, but, yeah, wait till we see. And finally I think I hit on all my points I wanted to share from practice, except for Quentin Bohanna. So when they went into inside drill, which inside drill is essentially it's a team drill, but it's all focused on running. So you're really just focused on the front seven. They UK does it differently than I'd seen it before, where they only do front seven. Typically, it's just front seven versus front seven. But UK will throw the secondary stuff in there so they can get some screens out of it just to kind of, you know, keep people on how to attack the line and wrap up and open field.
Just to drill for run fits.
Yes.
Make sure you're in your – for defense, you're in your gaps. And for offense, make sure – you know, it's assignment football. Make sure you're doing what you're supposed to do inside on those running plays.
First and foremost, Quinn Bohanna does not move like a player his size. He's really explosive. Really just as fast as the ends out of his stance. Secondly – his ability to, when you have an entire offensive line blocking you down, and you can take up not only the two guys, but the guy on your left is trying to block down, but he's holding up three guys.
He's a Mike linebacker's best friend.
Yeah, he was holding up Stenberg, Drake, and Fortner at once. And, I mean, you know, they're still fine enough rush lane, but, like, instead of 3 and 4 yards downfield, the linebacker's able to get there at 1 and 2. Bohanna, folks, I hope you enjoyed that feature that Kentucky put out on Sunday. I hope you enjoyed number 95 this year, because I don't think you're going to see him next year.
Thing with him is health and durability. He's had injury issues, so it's getting him on the field. But there, you mentioned the athleticism. There's a reason he had 91 tackles and 19 sacks in Memphis in his senior year in high school.
That's a lot of tackles.
He can move. He's a big boy that can move. Mm-hmm. And we just... last year, I think he was really set to have a big season, and then he got hurt against Florida.
Yeah.
An ankle injury that he was hampered by all season. And then later in the year, he started to play well, had a big fourth down stop against Vanderbilt when they were kind of knocking on the door down there in a close ball game. And he's just a guy that can really emerge as one of the better interior defensive linemen in the conference. And, like, you're right. He's a big year away from really being a bona fide NFL draft prospect.
Yeah. So I really like where Bohanna's at. One other fun thing that I'm going to write more about later on this week, but I was talking to Calvin Taylor, and I just like Calvin Taylor. He's a fun person to talk to. He's got a lot of enthusiasm for life. That's all I like him. Calvin Taylor, all 6'9", 275 pounds of him, he plays nose guard in Kentucky's what he calls it the magic package.
So and pass rushing package?
Yes, and I love that it's called magic package. And I'm thinking that it's essentially – what Josh Pascal, when he would come in as a three-down lineman back in his freshman year.
Yeah, they used him as a three technique.
And he murdered that dude from Southern Miss out of it. Just it was a safety, but
on the shovel pass.
But they all refs suck at forward progress. If you get tackled in the end zone, like it's a safety. That drives me crazy. But so in this magic package this year, you've got 6'9 Calvin Taylor batting down passes at the line of scrimmage. That's basically what they want him for.
Right.
Like, just maybe get a little pushback in a bull and then throw your hands up.
Push the pocket, and if he gets any penetration at all, you've got a tree right there in front of the quarterback.
It's hilarious. Because, like, I mean, he's going to get at least 4 pass deflections this year. That's not going to be – 3rd and long isn't an obvious. They're not going to be in that a ton. But even just throwing his side, he's going to get some pass deflections.
And a lot of times he's been Kentucky's best run guy in the middle, defensive line run stuffer. So that's something that's, I think it's a nice piece. I'd like to see who they have coming off the edge in those. Do they put Jordan Wright's hand in the ground, or are they put Boogie in a track stance? Are they playing Pascal inside?
Because I would think that Pascal is ideal for that scenario.
What's this new and improved TJ Carter?
Yeah.
What's he look like as a pass rusher now? You know, that's another thing. We've heard about him all camp, really.
Yeah, I didn't get to see him today.
So we're not going to know until Toledo rolls into town August 31st.
It's going to be exciting. Which, speaking of versatile, explosive pass rushers, Kentucky got one in a recruit today in Trayvon Ribka from Tennessee.
Nashville area.
He said, hey, Vols, take out your suck it and suck it.
That's a little KRC humor
yeah,
there
you
for
like
you.
Yeah, you like that little KRC or office humor, hardly committed humor. Either way, I really love that reference. But mostly I really love when somebody from the state of Tennessee, a four-star guy, just turns down the Vols to come to the Bluegrass.
You know that rubs Phil Fulmer the wrong way.
Oh, he's fired up. Now, they got Randall Cobb's nephew, but, like, Kentucky's on the hot for their running
back. That rubs him the wrong way and Jeremy Pruitt the wrong way. I think there's a little, probably, rivalry there between Pruitt and Stoops
and
from
Ripka
the
took
Florida State coordinator days.
Pruitt, what did he coordinate?
He was the defensive coordinator the year after Stoops left, and they won the title that year.
Yeah, you're right.
Won the title with
Stoops'
players.
Yeah, they won the title with Stoops' players. That is a fact. Pruitt couldn't have done it without Stoops.
And got a lot of credit for that. Yeah. You know, got him the Georgia job, then got him the Alabama job, and then got him the Tennessee job where Stoops kind of built that defense, left it.
Yeah.
And then
just missed
the best year.
Yeah.
Right.
The thing I liked about Ripka, though, is that, like, I don't know what he's going to play, but he can play in, like, three being a down lineman and a 3-4, those ends are kind of interchangeable. It's just how are you better in a 5 or?
Well, they can mix up the fronts. I think this year with Taylor and Carter, you're going to play an eagle front, which is the nose, and then 2-4 eyes. And 2-4 eyes is inside eye of the tackle,
yes,
where they're going to line up
which
mostly.
Is not like that's. I think that's like the hardest spot you could play because you can get stuck with guards pulling at you,
yeah,
you get tackles that can easily block you down because that's your that's their first step. It's a
you have to be really strong and you have to be really good at holding your ground and be able to be kind of a two gap player where you can kind of maintain two gaps even with multiple blockers coming at you.
Which that's Derek O'Bronx hashtag
two gapper.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and this Ripka kid, I think it can be a two gapper. He was rated 18th overall and 18th strong side defensive end by Rivals, a 4-star guy. The day before, Kentucky picked up DeAndre Buford, where Steve Kleinscale, he's really cashing in Michigan. I think
when 5 commits in the last 2 years from the Great Lakes State.
When Kentucky was contemplating, when they were doing the whole, you got a 10th assistant, keeping Clink, I think there was a decision to be made. Do you keep Kleinscale? Do you just get rid of him, get another secondary guy? What do you do? And Stoops investing in Kleinscale and saying, okay, I like the work he's putting in on the recruiting front. It's really paid off.
It has paid off big time.
Yeah.
And you look at the guys he's pulled in from Michigan. I mean, it's some big time. McCall was a top 200 prospect. Justin Rogers is borderline.
He's 15.
Yeah. 5-star on some and borderline 5-star on others. Then you look. DeAndre Buford is a 4-star by a lot of.
About 24/7, yep.
And then.
He got an Ole from Miami.
Mm-hmm. And then Ernest Sanders, receiver from Flint, might be my favorite player in this class right now. I loved his highlight tape.
Oh.
And he's a guy that, you know, Michigan State wanted really bad.
Yeah.
And some other schools wanted. So.
Oh, and you didn't mention DeAndre Square.
And then DeAndre.
All
I was
the
getting there.
Freshman
and then DeAndre
team
Square
yeah.
was. Had LSU offers, had some a lot of other big schools after him, comes to Kentucky, and now he's set to be, you know, that 3-year starter at Will linebacker. So not only is he getting players from Michigan, but he's getting guys that are coming down here, the two guys that are down here already and playing, and the other guys are guys that look to be some of the best players in that class. So he's really making an impact on the trail.
Yeah, and so right now Kentucky, top 25 class. Pretty much consensus, and it's nice.
And it's trending to be a top 25 class, not just that it's top 25 now. It's
there's staying power.
It has it has a star power, staying power to come February, come December, when you know the signing days hit. It's going to be in that top 25.
So of the 16 commitments, half of them are at least a 4-star in one of the services. Pretty good, pretty good. And I think move. Oh, another thing too. Did you notice there's ton of crystal ball picks for one Michael Drennan, and he's Kentucky doesn't necessarily need more skill players, but when they're like, we're just going to get the best guys we can get, he's Lynn Bowden type good.
Well, I mean, he's a guy that Wandell Robinson ish. You can line him up slot, running back, wherever. Yeah.
He's that prototype player.
So he's a guy, and especially when you're losing Bolden this year, he's a guy that can come in and make an impact right away. Because you get the ball, get him the ball in space, and just let him work.
Just go do something.
Yeah. Right.
Go make some moves. Another thing I wanted to mention from the scrimmage, aside from the fact that Kavasse Smoke ended MJ Devonshire, he canceled him. Said, welcome to the SEC, freshman.
Dropped the Heisman on him. Hit him with the smoke, pew, as pew. Some would say.
Ooh, some would say that. And apparently it was on his Instagram, too. Because that was the thing I got really mad at UK about. Because they wouldn't post the video. Like, they edited it out of their...
Yeah, they had the picture of the aftermath, I think, was what they posted.
Yeah, but they wouldn't, like, come on, dude. Are you...
Quick thing on Smoke. We heard he was battling injuries early. He missed, I believe, last scrimmage.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to see him back and rolling a little bit because he's a guy that's going to be a big part of the offense. I think he's going to get about 8, 9, 10 touches a game. So they need him in there, and they need him to really provide a kind of a big play pop as that kind of hybrid between Rose and Rodriguez. Rodriguez is a smash guy. I guess Rose kind of does a little bit of both, but you're hoping Smoke can be your kind of guy, game-breaking back, the guy that come in there and give you some explosive plays.
Exactly. And so I enjoyed that just from the fact, too, that I like the I just enjoyed the kind of welcome to the SEC moments. Oh, God, that is nasty. UK, put it on Instagram. Put it on Twitter, UK. More people see it there. When you get 3,000 likes, you get just as many, if not more, on Twitter. Man, just brutal. The other thing I like, though, is I can see Terry Wilson going through his reads, and you just didn't get that last year. He was a one-read quarterback last year, maybe two.
By design.
Yeah. This year, he's getting to his fourth option at running back, and it's working. Whether it's third
running backs are going to be the checkdowns.
I mean, and just from a, like, it's third and five, and I can trust A.J. Rose to take this for a first down. And then this was probably the defense messing up, but the longest touchdown of the day was coverage breaks down, give it to Upshaw. Boom, wide open, and third read, wide open.
12 personnel, something we're going to see a lot of.
We're going to see a lot of. And you know what? Like, I really like it in the run game because I just love seeing people pulling across the line of scrimmage. And even though it's not technically like that, it looks like a counter motion when you've got the Upshaw going. Because he's been the kind of H-back with Riggs had his hand in the dirt.
Right.
And essentially you get everybody blocking down one way, and then he acts as the lead block on the other side of the line.
Right.
And I think you just, as Rose said, he's like, I was talking today, he's like, yeah, I get more one-on-one chances with guys, and if I can just make him miss, boom, off to the races.
One of their staple run plays is that split zone where you have the backside tight end or backside H-back goes back the other way while everybody blocks right. He comes and kicks out the end on the other side of the line of scrimmage, and it creates kind of an alley there for your running back.
I love that play.
And so that's something they ran a lot, and I think it's something, obviously it's one of their staple plays, but it's something they're going to run a lot this year too.
Go ahead.
It's because it's a playoff of that inside zone because it gives you kind of a little cutback opportunity.
Exactly. And they don't have to take it too. Zone, the front side might be wide open in general. And I was watching them actually do their drill where Graham lost his mind. That's when he was saying, friggity gosh darn it almighty. like Flanders from The Simpsons. Because one of their drills is they have, you know, garbage cans set up. And Grant is just calling out where the read is, where the hole is. And they've got to, like, react right away.
Right there. They got to read it and go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's like,
or process it in their mind and then hit it.
You can see it. I posted a video. It's like 3 minutes, and it's a bunch of 10-second clips from individual drills. And, like, you might not get it right away, but, like, some of them are really cool. Like, the one they do for field goal block. It's just cool. Because you just don't see stuff like that. From the tackling drills to the just going out of the shoots. The running back was one that was interesting that I hadn't seen before, though. That just, and it took me a while to pick up on it as well. But that's how that translates directly over into the game. And to go back to 12 personnel, I just like that. The options they give you from the two guys on the outside, because you'll have Bowden off the line. They typically have Ollie on the same side as the tights. And he made some good plays going deep today. And when things go wrong, you can have Upshaw across the middle of the field and throw it up to him. They're big, easy targets to find. They didn't have their best day today. I thought Vince Merrill was going to blow a gasket at a point or two. But, you know, it is one day in August.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
But I heard Merrill kind of lost his stuff today. Rig dropped a pass, maybe?
Yeah, Riggs dropped a pass, and he just, oh, he was going to just crush him. He was going to, like, rip his arms off. It was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. That's not a guy you want mad at you, I would imagine.
Oh, and I think a lot of it is, too, is because most coaches are hesitant to build him up.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if he's been building you up and you don't live up to the hype, oh, man, he'll dog your ass. And then he dogged Upshaw for not running, which I think that's his biggest thing. And you know what they're going to do? There's going to come a game where Upshaw is going to get put on the bench for Bates for a while because Upshaw isn't running hard enough.
Right.
And that's just a – I've been told I've done good
things. You never want to have to coach effort.
Yeah, and I think it's mostly just from a – he's been hurt all the time, and so he – I think the thought is I'm going to come in and crush it. Well, you got to put a little sauce on there too. There's going to be a – ooh, I can't just – this is no walk in the park against Toledo.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm sure he'll want to crush them. Toledo's only like 30 miles from Lima, from my understanding.
Probably going
to
be a lot of guys he played high school ball against.
Exactly. A lot of guys. Yes, a lot of them. Okay. Enough of that. We've talked a lot of practice. Let's briefly...
Do you want to touch Scalzo's injury at all?
No, I mean, thoughts and prayers, but right. Scalzo wasn't going to play.
Right, he was redshirting. It just sucks. Same knee, right?
Yeah, same knee, same injury. Non-contact. Mm-hmm. It just sucks.
And it's a big development year, though, for those quarterbacks. So it gives Gilmore kind of a heads up, you know, yeah. Or a head start, we should say. Leg up.
Yeah, we combined heads them up, both. Leg up, whatever. Time.
But,
it's
you know,
been a long day.
Thanks for him, but yeah.
The one thing I did like is I did see Scalzo leaving earlier, and he was like, you know, at least I know what to do. Like, I've been through this before, mm-hmm. So kid's got a good attitude.
Well, and was Merrill getting ahead of himself on Devonshire?
No.
Because I know Stoots hammered on the brakes.
Stoops
about
is
that.
He just hates that so much.
Yeah, they're the opposite ends of the spectrum on that.
Exactly.
I feel like.
That's why he needs Vince, because he needs a hype man. Because Stoops is not a hype man. And Devonshire, he's running with the twos, and he's not going to redshirt this year. I'm almost certain he won't. Because he's
most
one of those,
likely he's your starting kick returner. Yeah, or yeah, and that your sixth defensive back.
Because when you need somebody to cover a slot, I trust him more than anybody right now. From
right,
you can't coach speed.
And he's going to be on every special team.
Yeah.
More than likely.
Yeah. I mean, he had like 3 punt return for touchdowns last year. He had some pretty crazy stats. I think 6.
He had 6 interceptions, and then he had all kinds of touchdowns on offense just from big plays.
Yeah, but he had a couple special teams ones, too.
Right, that sounds right.
Oh. Trenches. We're trying to preview each position. And essentially, we've talked at length about the defensive line. The offensive line... We mentioned the defensive line a lot today. Cordell Looney was the one who got T.J. Carter's reps, by the way.
That's what I figured. He's not a guy we've talked about a lot. Mm-hmm. Really, the bench guys, we talked about are McCall and Hoskins, but Looney's going to play a big role, and he's going to play a lot because he's going to be – they're 6 deep, really, on the defensive line, and he's that 6th guy.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I like that LeBlanc said in one of the conversations I've had with him over training camp, he's like, you know, we have the luxury of starters, put all that stuff aside. Whoever's on the field's a 1.
Right.
So they're
6 starters, pretty much.
Exactly. They're going to be rotating a lot of guys. And keeping up with it, if you can do that, God bless you. I'm not going to be able to. There's too much happening on there. But I'm really confident that defense line. And I'm really confident in the offense line, too. Logan Stenberg is a tackle at a lot of places, and he's playing guard.
Mm-hmm.
Those boys are going to be good. Fortner, well done, proven, but Kennard going to be great. Mason Wolf and Wilson, I think they're both fighting to be who's going to be
the eighth man.
Yeah, who's going to be that guard that gets to rotate in? Because you know Nasir Watkins is going to be that tackle that rotates in. And I'm trying to think of who's the other one. Who's the other guy? I'm leaving off that'll be in the rotation. Probably maybe Austin Dotson.
Yeah, I think you got Dotson and Dorsey. They're kind of fighting for a guard spot at tackle. You've got Watkins, Nick Lewis, who I don't think probably ready.
He's
yet.
Big as hell.
Yeah, I think you're
losing. He's enormous.
Darian Kennard, Landon Young, and then Nasir Watkins are kind of going to be your tackles this year.
And then you can kind of mix up some 3 and then between Wolf, Wilson, and maybe Dotson.
I think Eddie Grant talked about the 8, I believe, today. Yeah. I think the 8 is pretty much your starting 5. Landon Young, from left to right, Landon Young, Logan Stenberg, Drake Jackson, Luke Fortner,
Darren Kennard.
And then off the bench, your tackle, Nasir Watkins. Nasir Watkins is going to play both.
Yep.
And then your primary backup at guard, I think, is Mason Wolf. Yep. And then I think they're going to try to mix in Quentin Wilson there. The ninth is, I think, probably, if I had to guess, it's down to maybe Horsey and Dotson.
Yeah, yeah. But all in all,
but they got seven that they know they feel that have played before and they feel good about. And then Quentin Wilson's getting some hype this camp, so he could turn into that eighth guy, a redshirt freshman.
This year, Kentucky's offensive line, very stout. Moving forward, they could lose, aside from Drake, I mean, you could lose your whole left side of the line. And then Kennard's got to bounce back left. Then you got Watkins. So there could be some significant rebuilding next year.
Right.
But they do have things at least staggered out.
Which is why it's important to develop that depth, because if you get Quentin Wilson and Kenneth Horsey or Austin Dotson some reps this year, it helps out for next season.
Yes, exactly.
And then Nasir Watkins can kind of step into attack. That's if Landon Young leaves. He might come back.
Yeah, yeah. No, so
then you could be loaded at tackle next year.
Yes.
Three guys with three, you know, solid playing time under the belt, three guys. And then you kind of bring those guards along, and then you still got your big guy in the middle, and then everything's kind of set still for next year. But the offensive line, they've kind of dominated this camp, it sounds like. They've been nothing but good things. Mm-hmm. I think they're really good. I think it's easily the best offensive line on paper Stoops has had to this point. And now it's seeming like they have some depth to go with it, and it's a group that they're really going to lean on. I think it's the best positional group on the team. So,
best positional group on the team?
Yeah.
Pretty bold statement.
Who you taking over the offensive line?
Maybe the defensive line.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, man.
When you look at – now, are you look at Drake Jackson.
I'm thinking of just
top – Darian Kennard.
I'm thinking of depth across. I think defensive line might happen. But as far as top-end talent
– let me ask you this.
Stenberg and Young and Jackson are –
would it surprise you if Stenberg, Landon Young, Drake Jackson, or Darian Kennard made an All-SEC team?
No.
That's four guys. On – defense, I think we can get ourselves a Bohanna there. I think maybe we can talk ourselves into Carter, but that's probably about it.
I could maybe see myself. I'm all now, in on Calvin Taylor, too.
I think you can argue depth. Maybe that defensive line has – because they're legit too deep at every spot.
Yeah. That's probably why I've got so much confidence in them, and because they need to be really good.
Right.
And also –
I think that offensive line has four draft picks playing on it right now.
Boom.
Landon Young, Drake Jackson, Logan Stenberg, Darian Kennard.
Yeah, Kennard's going to be really good. He probably won't make an All-SEC team this year, but he's
going to be up there. Next year when we go to media days, he's going to be a guy that I think people are talking about picks. In the mix. He's going to be a guy that I get on this podcast next year and say it's ridiculous that Darian Kennard's not on one of these All-SEC teams.
You're exactly right. Exactly right. But
we'll save that for next year.
Yes, we'll save that for next year. Because you know what? We got to talk some gambling. Like it.
Let's rock and roll.
Let's rock and roll. Over-under week, it's happening. We're talking overs. We're talking unders. We pick some lines. So here's the thing, like it. I told you yesterday, let's each try to pick four or five that we like. And I'm not going to lie. There's some that I really like, and there are some that I thought they were interesting, so I got them.
Let's throw them out there.
So first one that I'm like, dude, how is this? I don't understand how this is the line, but Northwestern's is at 6.5. Northwestern is 6.5. They haven't they've won at least 7 games in each of the last 4 years. They had a 10-win season 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Their quarterback is Hunter Johnson.
It's a Clemson transfer. Five star from Indiana.
Yeah. Dude is a freaking stud. And they're in the Big Ten West.
Big Ten West is a lot of cannibalism going on there because all the teams are kind of the same. Oh,
they're all like 7-8 win teams.
Right.
Like completely across the board. Nebraska, Purdue.
So it comes down to the close
Minnesota.
Games.
All of them, it's going to come down to who's going to win close games.
And here's why Northwestern is a good bet more times than not in a situation like this. Usually in one possession games, if you're around 55, 56%, it's like gambling. If you're in the 56, 57% spot, you're winning money. Well, Pat Fitzgerald in 9 years, he's like 62 or 63% in one possession games.
Now, the only thing I do worry is that their cross game is they host Ohio State this year.
On a Friday night
and
in
October. And they open the season at Palo Alto, playing Stanford.
Yeah.
That's, but aside from that, here's the thing. Look, I will freely admit, I'm one of those gamblers who I don't bet big, and I get teams that I like to bet on because they always play it close to the line, good or for better or worse.
Mm-hmm.
And Purdue, for selfish reasons, because I got family there and I just like paying attention to them, and Northwestern are just – they're either going to crush the line or they're going to be like, oh, God, what are you doing? Yeah. And I like the over with Northwestern. I do not like it with Purdue, though. Purdue's at 7, and that's untouched. Yeah. You cannot touch that line.
You feel good about Northwestern at bare minimum just getting the 7-5.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's perfectly acceptable. Purdue, though – like, I think Purdue, this is Jeff's best team because they got Sindelar back. Milton Wright is going to be really good. I know that, like...
They just lost their running back, broken jaw, in practice the other day.
Brutal. But I really do enjoy... Like, they've got a good defensive line.
Their defense kind of dipped down last year, but I think it's going to take a step back up this season.
The reason why I can't like the 7... Like, I think it's just purely untouchable is because they're... Non-conference.
Mm-hmm.
They play, I think, 9 Power 5 teams. They open at Nevada, which is in elevation on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm. They play 11 Power 5 teams total.
11, sorry, yeah.
Because the Big Ten has 9 conference games, and then they're playing Vanderbilt and TCU. Now they get both of them at home.
Yeah, and TCU kind of...
TCU's kind of...
They're weird.
Down, up.
They're
trending to... This is supposed to be their up year, but they got... And that's a team I like, who I was talking to my friend about it the other day, about a season total. I believe... He wanted to play over 7.5, and I was like, I really like that with TCU, but I couldn't pull the trigger because they got major quarterback issues. They had like a 5-team quarterback competition.
Oh, I was listening to what's her coach's name? Patterson. He was on Big 12 Media Day, and mm-hmm. I'm just listening on my XM satellite trial. And he literally like said with a straight face, all 5 quarterbacks have an equal chance. Like, and I'm like, dude, are you freaking kidding me? But Gary Patterson. They also play against Vanderbilt, who they have 3 NFL players on offense. Keyshawn Vaughn, Jared Pickney.
But they get Vanderbilt the week after they're probably going to get beat up by Georgia. So that's probably a good spot to play them.
Ooh, can we briefly mention, too, I like that we're just diving right down rabbit holes. Because freaking Vanderbilt, what the hell is Derek Mason doing with his quarterbacks? He's just like, you know what? Screw it, Georgia. We're not going to tell you who's going to be our guy.
Because he doesn't know who this guy's going to be.
I swear to God, if they just had Kyle Shermer for one more year, could they not get like a gray shirt or something or like anything? If they just could keep him one more year,
I've been talking
about
that Vanderbilt offense all offseason, really, and I love it everywhere but quarterback.
It's so bad. It is so bad.
There's a scenario where it could just get ugly, where the guy can't get Kalijah Lipscomb and Jared Pinkney in the ball. Keyshawn Vaughn, as much as I love him, is kind of injury prone, where he could get banged because they play Georgia. Purdue, they have a bye third week of the season, and then LSU comes into town, and they're going to drink all the beer out of Vanderbilt Stadium. It's going to be a party in Nashville, and they're going to get beat up in that game, too.
You want to talk about a fun, random road trip. LSU at Vanderbilt in Nashville with all those LSU fans.
That beer isn't going to last until the second quarter. about that strip right there. What's it called? Midtown or whatever.
Demumbrian.
Demumbrian. Yeah. I mean, that's just going to be all purple and gold.
Oh, man. All right. Do you have, to get back to our totals, do you have any you'd like to share?
Yeah, my first one is Wake Forest. Total's 5.5. I think Dave Clawson is one of the better coaches in the ACC. They're coming off a year where they had to replace a quarterback who his name is escaping me at the moment. I can't believe I'm forgetting this kid's name. Oh, it's Wolford. John Wolford really kind of tore it up in 2017, and they kind of had a rocky start, but they recovered late. They run tempo on offense, and they just – I think Dave Clawson does some really good things. So he's coming off 3 consecutive bowl appearances, at least seven wins in each season at Wake Forest, which is, you know, pretty daggone impressive. And – you look at their non-conference, I think Utah State's a good team, but I think they're going to beat them at home. Rice is terrible. Here's something that not a lot of people know. Wake Forest got so mad at the ACC scheduling 8 games that they're playing North Carolina in a non-conference game.
Wait. Say that again?
They scheduled North Carolina. North Carolina and them are playing, I believe, at Wake Forest this year and Chapel Hill next year, but it's going to be a non-conference game.
But they're in the same conference.
Right, but they want to play – North Carolina. They aren't because they're in different divisions.
And the ACC refuses to just expand it to a 9.
The ACC just told them, "Hey, this is how we're scheduling. So if you want to."
If you want to play each other, you all got to
play
take
non-conference.
Up. That's crazy.
Yeah, could you imagine if Kentucky played, I don't know. I don't think it would work for Kentucky if Auburn was like, hey, we want to play Florida because we don't get to play Florida a lot and there's kind of a rivalry there. Let's just play a non-conference game in September. That's kind of what it's like. So they're going to play North Carolina non-conference game. North Carolina's rebuilding, and then they have the FCS game. I could see them going, if they get 3 wins in the non-conference, they're going to hit this. 4, I could see it happen. Then you look at their schedule. Louisville's a win at home. They get NC State rebuilding at home, Duke at home. I see potentially 8-9 wins if everything goes right. So I think they're going to get to at least 6. So that's – when I pick up these over-unders, I go through the schedule and say, how many wins do I see? And then if I have a – there's a game gap between it. I give myself a cushion. So if they lose one, I expect them to win, I can still fall back. And this is one with Lake Forest where I could easily see them going 8-4.
The thing that I find just fascinating about over-unders in general is that it is to see where Vegas sets it compared to expectations elsewhere. Like, because they're trying to find a median line because you want action on both sides. And the one line that really I was interested to see, because we talked about it a lot on here, is South Carolina. They've got a crazy schedule, but they've got a pretty good defensive front 7, you know, and that Jake Bentley's a 4th-year starter. All advanced
Brian
metrics.
Brian Edwards, NFL receiver.
Yeah, so like in all of your advanced analytics say that they're projected 6 wins. So Vegas only puts them at 5.5. SEC media predicts them to finish like 3rd or 4th in the East. 4th, I think. 2 spots ahead of Kentucky.
Yeah, it's 4.
So
5 Tennessee,
so
6
pretty
Kentucky.
Much. The numbers people are much less bullish on everybody else as far as expectations. And the thing is like, he really can't, like, if they, that North Carolina game will make or break their season.
It's a big game.
Huge game.
And it's kind of, they're going to be going kind of a rivalry, or not a rivalry, it's kind of recruiting bragging rights game too, because they're going to be butting heads with Mac Brown and North Carolina a lot. Now on the recruiting trail, and the Carolinas going down into Georgia for like those borderline 3-star, 4-star type recruits in the South. So that's a big game. And then if you get that one, I think you feel pretty good about getting to 6. But do you like that under? Are you just playing that the schedule's so loaded that they're just going to kind of be beaten down and they're going to
see
they're sitting at 5-7?
I am. Like, I really want to play the under 2 just because, like, I love to just bash South Carolina. But there's also a part of it that, like, Will Muschamp is the kind of guy to lose a team pretty quickly. Now, they rallied 2 years ago, and they won a bunch of games at the end of the year. But, I mean, at Florida, that's exactly what happened. It got away with him in a hurry. And they lose the Louisville in the Sugar Bowl. I mean, that was a good Florida team that year. They were in the SEC. They were a couple plays away from beating.
Defense was awesome.
They were really close to winning the SEC championship, and I think that was a college football playoff year. Was it?
That was the year or two before. I think it was 2012, and the playoff started 2014.
So if they win that game, though, they had a shot to go to the BCS championship game.
They ended up not winning the East, but it came down to that Georgia game, and they lost about like 4 points in the cocktail party. But, I mean, it was a team that they beat Johnny Manziel in his Heisman season.
Yeah. They were a really good football team that year.
On the road.
And then everything just completely fell apart the following year. And I think that can happen when you don't have a lot of depth and you're playing just an absolutely brutal schedule. And that's what they're facing this year.
Here's my thing with Muschamp. I think he does his best coaching kind of as that underdog. And this year, everybody's talking that this is kind of your year. Yeah. So you kind of rally the troops,
back
down the hatches.
That's why this is probably a good line for Vegas to stay away from. Like,
right.
I feel like because at 6, even at 6, like, I don't.
See, I think it's very easy. You could talk yourself South Carolina in 7. Beat Carolina, Charleston Southern, lose to Bama. They kind of own Missouri. I don't think Muschamp has lost to Missouri since being there. You're due against Kentucky. Georgia's a loss. Florida, who knows? Muschamp still hasn't lost to Tennessee. When you combine his Florida and South Carolina careers. And then you get App State later and Vanderbilt in November. Those two back-to-back at home in November. So if you get, you know, if those kind of fall your way, you could get to seven, and then you're looking at a potential Music City Bowl. Now, they've got – now, this is the best roster he's had at South Carolina, but we don't know the culture, really, of that locker room. Like, what happens if you know, they get the Alabama hangover and they have to follow that Alabama trip up to Missouri, Kentucky, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee.
Yeah.
All in a row. Vanderbilt, Appalachian State. We just don't know. So, that's something I think – I'm not going to play it. If I had to play it, I'd play the over, but I could go either way. You could talk me into either side.
I know. That's why it's tough. And I want you to give me one that you like, and then I'm going to give you a couple quick hitters and just to see what your thoughts are. Because I found some that I think are really intriguing that I just – I don't know. I'm like, ooh, this is right up my alley. And then we're going to end with some of the local teams. So which ones do you like?
Out in Los Angeles, Clay Helton is on about the hottest seat you can get on.
Ooh, Urban Meyer literally moved out there.
He tried to hire Cliff Kingsbury, hired him, and then the Arizona Cardinals decided they want him as a head coach. So he loses Cliff Kingsbury. Hires a guy by the name of Graham Harrell. Graham Harrell, for those who remember, was the guy who threw that ball to Crabtree to beat Texas. Yeah,
he was the guy.
And Crabtree made the play. But that was Graham Harrell was the guy who threw the ball.
Yeah.
So Graham Harrell was, you know, one of Mike Leach's better quarterbacks at Texas Tech, has a cup of coffee in the NFL. Then quickly rises up the coaching ladder. It was at North Texas the last couple of seasons. Had a really good offense there. It's pretty much the closest thing kind of to Mike Leach's offense, which is just spread it out and it's dink and dunk. And they don't go super fast, but they just want to spread you out and just slice you up with accuracy in the passing game. Yeah. So that's what he's going to be running at USC. And USC has dudes all over the roster. Now, I know they went 5-7 last year, and Clay Helton is this popular kind of lightning rod that – hey, fire him. Urban Meyer is going to be the next coach, and that's all anybody wants to talk about. But the total is 7 here. It's arguably the most talented team in that conference, especially in that division. It's a team that lost a lot of close games last year, so if you fix that offense, you could get some bounces your way. And I just don't – I like to – I could see Clay Helton getting fired, and I'm still going 8-4.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I'm playing the talent. I'm betting on that air raid offense more than anything. Mm-hmm. That's going to fix a lot of their issues, just being competent on offense. Because from a talent standpoint, outside of when Leach was at Oklahoma, these are going to be the best players that have ran this scheme that Graham Harrell's installing out there. So it's a team that I think can win that division pretty – that could win that division. You know, I know Utah's a trendy pick for a lot. I could see this team getting to the Pac-12 championship game and pushing for double-digit wins. And who knows, maybe even saving Clay Helton's job, or could it be like, no, we just want a new start, even with a 9-3 type season.
What is the line on that one?
7.
7, yeah. And you're also betting against the rest of the Pac-12 being good,
right,
which is pretty, you know, that's a pretty safe bet. One other one that I think is, I've looked at it and I kind of laughed a little bit. Nebraska's at 8.5. What are the Cornhuskers been huffing over there? 9 wins? You kidding me?
Well, I think a lot of it, Scott Frost, his second year at UCF, they ran the table.
Well, okay.
And then
that's the American.
I think that's
this is the Big Ten.
I hear you loud and clear. I think that's a lot of people kind of got that Scott Frost fever.
Yeah. Well, I will gladly accept their
and
money.
And then a lot of people are buying into Adrian Martinez, who Butch hurt. Jones had at Tennessee, who would be quarterback at Tennessee right now if Butch Jones was still the coach there.
Could have been a champion of life.
Yep.
Well, oh, real shame.
It worked out pretty well for Adrian Martinez.
Yeah, he runs. He's much more mobile than Jarrett Garantano. Mm-hmm. I also think Florida at 9, like, and this isn't like a – but if they trip up against Kentucky, I mean, they're going to lose at LSU. They're not beating Georgia. So
that's 2.
Yeah, so they just got to lose another one. You're at least pushing.
And they got to go to South Carolina and to Kentucky and to Missouri.
Yeah, yes.
So you –
and also,
I think they're going to lose at least one of those.
I think the thing that
and Auburn at home is a tough draw out of the West.
I think what bugs me the most about the Florida hype is that it's purely predicated on how they finish the season, and they beat a Michigan team that didn't have their best players playing.
We did the same thing with South Carolina last year after they beat Michigan.
Exactly. It's the same exact thing. It's the post I beat Michigan in a bowl game hype, and like thinking that Felipe Franks is an elite quarterback, and he's just not. He's a fine quarterback. Now, their receivers, I forgot that Kadarius Toney went pro. Dude's good.
They got some intriguing skill talent.
Yeah, but
running back, I like their running back. I think they got 3 really good running backs. you know, Van Jefferson, Ole Miss transfer, Trayvon Grimes, Ohio State transfer.
Yeah, Jefferson wasn't as good as I thought he'd be last year, but still.
And then you got Tony, you kind of move around, blind in the slot. So they've got the weapons for Franks where he can just kind of be a distributor. Yeah, but they've got offensive line questions.
I still think that there's – like, they should have lost to Vanderbilt last year. You know, like, there's a lot of – they kind of got some dumb luck last year.
And right. I mean, Kentucky and Missouri both kind of beat them up at the Swamp last year.
All right. So I want to go some quick hitters that I'm interested. Georgia Tech's only at four? Is
Well, they're going option to modern-day football.
So is that the – because I know they're making out like gangbusters in the recruiting trail now, but I'm just assuming that they don't have the personnel.
Yeah, they're ripping it down to the studs. I think everybody's expecting for them to be one of the worst Power 5 teams, not named Rutgers this season.
So that was my good question. Also, I think it'd be fun to just bet Rutgers under 2.5.
Just for the thrill of it?
Just for the thrill of, like, cheering for Rutgers to lose Rutgers every single game.
Rutgers is going to have a new football coach next season.
Yeah.
His name rhymes with Brig Fuiano.
Oh, keep chopping wood? We're going to bring back the wood chopper again?
Bringing him back.
Ooh, I thought you were going to say his name rhymes with Jet.
Maybe he'll bring in Bobby Petrino as his offensive coordinator.
I was thinking his name would rhyme with Tet Gielema.
Oh, that'd be fun. Brett Bielema in New Jersey? Sign me up right now, brother.
The one that I thought you would be a big fan of is Auburn over 7.5 because it kind of they ebb and flow too.
Yeah,
and
I feel like this is they're on the ebb. Now with Bo Nix is officially in.
Your boy, Bo?
My boy, Bo.
Hey, Bo knows. So I think going over on 7.5 might not be a bad idea because, I mean, they
– But they could be a top 20 team and still go 7-5 with that schedule.
That's true. Cincinnati, how is their line only 7.5? Do they just lose every single player? Or am
No, it's actually the opposite. They bring everybody back.
And they've got all these grad transfers in. They won 11 games last year. Now, granted, one of those was a bowl game, but still, like, I don't understand.
Now, they have UCLA and Ohio State in the non-conference. So, if they lose that opener to UCLA, that's two losses. So, then, if you go 5-3 in conference, it's an under. So that's the big thing to watch out for. They have to go to Memphis. They get UCF at home, but their conference schedule is a little tricky. I think they got to go to Memphis, to Houston. But yeah, if you're a believer in Fickell and that talent he's got there, I mean, that's a play.
They've become grad transfer you too. If you haven't noticed, we talked about it a lot on the grad transfer market. Still haven't heard anything on Xavier Peters, by the way.
Still waiting.
Yep, still waiting. Okay. Do you like any others that you'd like to share with the?
Yeah, NC State. Last 2 years has been kind of their little window there. It's 7.5. I know the ACC is down, especially in that division outside of.
That's why there's an opportunity for
Clemson.
Them.
But they have to go to Florida State, and let me pull up their schedule. They have to go to West Virginia, I believe.
West Virginia has only a 5-win total. Austin Kendall was just named their starter, and I think that guy could sling it around a little bit. I don't know West Virginia isn't that great, but. Neil Brown, Austin Kendall, sign me up.
Syracuse is going to be a tough one at home at Boston College, at Wake Forest. I think they could both be underdogs in. They get Georgia Tech out of the other division, which is good, and North Carolina out of the other division, which is a rivalry. But I have a hard time seeing that team win more than 7 games just because of it's kind of the just lower down, throttle down, and then they kind of build off what they do this year and then kind of make another run.
Dave Doran, very I feel like that team is always in like a, they could be so good, and they're just not.
A lot of that's NC State as a program. They've always been kind of just, they have, it's like they have a big ceiling, but they have a roof that they just can't plow through. They just keep hitting their head.
A glass ceiling?
Yeah, glass ceiling. They're hitting their head on the glass ceiling.
And the Wolfpack, just embrace feminism, NC State. One day you'll make it.
But it's a program that's always kind of – you feel like they're always in that 7-8-9 window. It can never, you know, break through and have that kind of season like Kentucky had last year where you get 10 wins, you get, you know, you get some really big knockout wins for your program and kind of grow. They've gotten close with Doran, but they just haven't really gotten there yet.
Okay. Any others you'd like to go over? I would like to say Louisville, betting under 3.5, very tempting for U of L.
Right. It all comes – to me in that Louisville one – do you think it comes down to two things? Do you think they're going to beat WKU in Nashville or not? If you think that they have a really good shot to lose that game, it's an automatic kind of under pull for you.
I think they're probably going to win it though.
Yeah, and then it comes down.
And then they have to upset like
can they beat Boston College at home?
Yeah,
because me, that's the one, because it's early in the season. If you don't get that one, the schedule gets kind of rough right there. You have a couple road trips after that, and then it's kind of like, well, let's just play the young guys and see where we get. And then you got Clemson there at the end of October to beat you up, and then you go into November.
Because the thing is that made Louisville so bad last year is they couldn't block and tackle. And I think, like, they may not get much better at blocking, but those guys got a lot of experience, and I think they're going to get better at tackling just because they're going to be a better coach and they're going to give up. Yeah, so that's where it does make it tempting, and there's going to be some sort of bounce back effect. But they're not getting more than five wins max this year for Louisville.
Right.
And I still don't think
for me, happening. It all comes down to that Boston College game on October 5th at home. The fans will still be somewhat engaged, especially if they beat WKU and are competitive in Tallahassee. So you come home for a Boston College team that Louisville sees themselves as a superior program. So
even though A.J. Dillon has been just slamming dudes under the ground at the Cardinal Stadium for years.
Because if you lose that one, then you're at Wake Forest, Clemson at home, Virginia at home, who's going to be really good, at Miami, at NC State. So you could just go through a go through a gauntlet where you're getting thumped, and then by the time you know, you're sitting at like 2-8. And you got two games left.
You know what's probably the lock of the century, though?
What's that?
Kentucky over 6.5 wins.
I like this over there, man.
And you know what the thing is like, this really isn't just us. This is like the consensus of
Kirk Herbstreit's on it. Stanford Steve. My guy Tom Fornelli. Felica,
Fornelli. Pretty much every gambling person that I trust is on it. Now, I haven't seen Kentucky. What's Kentucky's S&P plus this year?
It's like 37, I think. So it's.
Did they have their projected win total though? Like,
I haven't. It's around 6.
Yeah, but that's the only thing that I trust with my gambling that doesn't like Kentucky, because the biggest part is that you mentioned the teams that like they can slip up and still get to 7.
Right. It's the same Kentucky
can lose to Toledo or Eastern Michigan, and I know everybody here's gonna be pissed off about it, but they can still win their last 5 games. Well,
if you just assume that they take care of business in the non-conference, that leaves 3 wins.
Yeah, and you got to beat Arkansas.
Is going to be one of the worst teams in the SEC.
Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt is a really bad quarterback situation from being down there in the bottom of the SEC. So you get those two, that's 6.
Then you just got to beat Mississippi State.
You have to win one of the Mississippi State, South Carolina, Missouri, Tennessee. You have to just win one of those.
Yeah, that's.
You're there at 7.
Yeah, so. And you know what? If they don't get to 7, I'll be really disappointed, because I think six is everything went bad. I don't even see a scenario where they only win 5 games this year, because they're that good up front. And blocking and tackling wins in the SEC. Right. They're going to be able to do that. They're going to be able to run the football. So,
and it's a total that you won't find out if you lose in September, but you can find out if you win in September. Because if they just win one of those Mississippi State, Florida, South Carolina games, as soon as if they get just one of those, you know, right then you're going over.
And you know what? I think they can get all 3. What's weird is they're traditionally much worse at playing at Starkville, but I think it's a lot easier team to beat, Mississippi State. They've played horribly
and
there recently.
I love that matchup for Kentucky if they run Tommy Stevens out there.
Yeah. Also, I'd like to say that I think it's I think South Carolina can get in their own heads in that game down there. Things don't go their way. They're self-destructing.
I went to that game in 2015 in Columbia.
Fun game.
And their fans were kind of shocked. They were like, we lost to Kentucky 2 years in a row?
Yeah.
And then 2017, they had the blackout. I heard their fans were pissed.
They were mad.
Because they upset NC State. An NC State team we were just talking about. Right. They had all
they thought it was going to be God's
gift
football.
And so Kentucky goes in there. Kentucky looked just really shaky to start the season, especially on offense. Mm-hmm. And then just goes in there and kind of dominates the game. And they just could. Debo takes that kickback, and then it was all Kentucky from that point.
Thank God he is gone. Mm-hmm. I was watching Monday Night Football with him. He is so good. And, like, the thing was, he was, like, one of those things where it's like, dude, just Debo. Like, he'll just do it to you. I mean, because it was Steven Johnson, I think, threw an interception. Next play, Debo goes 50 yards.
Right.
Just on a slant. Just beats Beatty.
Right.
Just because he's that good. And they don't have that. Mm-hmm. They don't have a running game either. So that gets me excited. And what gets me...
Thing to watch for South Carolina, though, Tavian Feaster, Clemson grad transfer, was a good running back at Clemson, but he was just stuck behind Travis Etienne, who is a freak. He reports out of camp is that he's been really good. So that could give them a legit running back that they really haven't had since the Spurrier era. So that's something we're going to have to watch for early.
I couldn't think of a name.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name. What I'm excited for, though, this Saturday night, 7 p.m., Camp Ramona Stadium, Florida Gators versus Miami Hurricanes. Gators 7.5-point favorites.
Under 47.
Oh.
That's going to be an ugly football game. You got – football coaches are creatures of habit.
Oh, this is a week early.
So they – their whole career, they've been building up to Labor Day. Now they're building up to the week before Labor Day. So this is going to be a game you're going to see some weird stuff in. Yeah, like you don't really see. And now when you play unders, a lot of times you got to watch out for the pick sixes, for the special teams touchdowns.
Jaren Williams first.
You know, for a backed up turnover. Yeah, Jaren Williams pick six. But it's two really good defenses going at it. Two offenses that I think are going to be like, all right, if – we feel good about our defense. Let's pump the brakes. Let's take it slow. Let's milk some clock. Let's run the ball. I like that under a 47.
I like the dogs in both games. Give me the dogs.
I do like the dogs in the late game.
They're howling.
7.5. Right? You get the touchdown on the hook right now. Just jumped up to 7.5 today.
Yeah. So give me that. And some of it is just like I'm wanting it to be a close game. This is – you got to bet with your gut and your heart and – like I can't do pure numbers, and so I'm going with Canes. Go Jaren Williams.
Yeah, Miami's got a lot of offensive questions. Another reason I like the under is both these offensive lines are trending to be kind of average at best this season. We really don't know much about Florida. Miami hasn't had a good offensive line in a long time. But on the other side of the football, those defenses are, you know, they've got pros littered through both of those defenses at all three levels.
Mm-hmm.
So it's. I think it's going to be a defense first game. And I think it's like I think you're looking at something like 17-13.
And man, it's going to be an exciting night. I frankly cannot wait. And we're happy that you waited around and stuck with us for an hour and 10 minutes.
And next week you get the full slate.
Yes, get the full slate. We're going to be talking other games. We're going to be previewing Toledo. We're going to have a depth chart to go through.
We're going to have a lot to cover up next week too, Mr. Ralph.
Yes, yes. So. Man, this was fun. Time flies when you're having fun. And we hope you had fun listening to another exciting, extravagant, I can't think of another adjective, amazingly spectacular 11 Personnel Podcast.